Ultimate Talk is Jericho. It is the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And let's get this weekend started with the always classic Duff McKagan joke of the week.
What do you call a Spanish gal with no legs? Consuelo. Thank you.
The bad jokes never ending from old Duff. We love them all. We thank Duff McKagan, Hall of Famer, Guns N' Roses bass player, going on tour this summer, for taking the time to call us every week with another classic Duff McKagan joke of the week. So you can do the same thing. Why don't you tweet your bad jokes to @TalkIsJericho, and let's see if you can top Duff. And if they're really bad, maybe I'll have Duff read them on the air to you. All right, so Kyle O'Reilly is on the show today, NXT's hottest, newest prospect, who's been in the business for about 10 years. He's not telling any bad jokes, even though he is an alumni of the original Talkin' Shop, started by my boys Gallows and Anderson in Japan. But Kyle is telling some great wrestling stories, and you hear all about how he went from being Ring of Honor world champion to signing with NXT and moving to Orlando, where he lives and works. Now, he's also talking about the ROH Red Dragon tag team he had with Bobby Fish, and how he and Bobby and Adam Cole are now a faction in NXT. Kyle spent a lot of time wrestling in Japan as well, and in the UK. He'll talk about his experiences overseas on the indie scene worldwide, and he'll also talk about being a type 1 diabetic, which hits home for me. And you also have one day left to support diabetes, the fight against diabetes. If you go to represent.com/Fozzie and pick up the brand new Fozzie t-shirt or hoodie, portions of the proceeds will go towards fighting diabetes, and it's a very, very worthy cause. Kyle knows all about that. And speaking of Kyle and talking about the overseas, that's where I am right now. Fozzie is wrapping up this leg of the Judas Rising European Tour. We're in Hamburg, Germany tonight, which is Friday, and then Genk, Belgium tomorrow on Saturday. Then we're headed back home to the States, but we'll be back in Europe in January. We're going over with Steel Panther, the tour that has been waiting to happen ever since we rocked Australia together. Those dates start up January 28th in Paris, Gay Paris. FozzieRock.com has all the details and ticket info and VIP info. We had a great VIP private mini concert yesterday. We played Judas, Drinking with Jesus, Breaking the Law, Cold Gin, and Spider in My Mouth. So the people got a chance to hear those songs, some that we play later on that night in concert, some that we don't. So it's been really cool. It's a great way to come hang out with Fozzie and get something extra, extra special. You can get all information about Fozzie VIPs and on the Steel Panther Fozzie tour and on the show that we're doing December 2nd in Springfield, Missouri. Toys for Tickets. You bring a toy and you get a ticket. So go to FozzieRock.com if you live in the Springfield area and get all that information. And everything is going very, very cool for Fozzie right now. Judas, number 5 on Billboard, number 5 on U.S. rock radio. And we're still going higher. Judas is not done yet. And it's not done here on Talk is Jericho, because we're going to listen to it right now. Here's Judas, top 5 single from Fozzie.
Beautiful on the inside, you are innocence personified, and I will drag you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow. I have carved out this soul made of stone, and I will drag. Embraced by the darkness, I'm losing the light. It's so cold.
Judas top five this week on Billboard's main mainstream rock charts and on active rock radio. And the Judas video is almost at 11 million views, which is just crazy. I can't keep track of it anymore. Thanks to all of you guys who have checked out that song, all you guys who have bought the Judas album and are telling me how much you love Painless and Drinking with Jesus and Burn Me Out, et cetera, et cetera. So get that album now. And we filmed the Judas video in Smyrna, Georgia at DDP Yoga Performance Center run by Diamond Dallas Page. And Dallas is bringing DDP Yoga as well to the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. He's going to host live DDP Yoga workshops. And don't kid yourself, it is a workout and it saved my career. You know that. It's fun. It's low impact. It's easy on your joints. If you've already reserved your cabin at ChrisJerichoCruise.com, then be sure to check out one of Dallas's workshops on board. And if you haven't booked a spot on the cruise, well, what the hell are you waiting for?
Talk is Jericho.
So you did a couple of talking shops with Gallows and Anderson.
Oh my God.
Did you? When you were in Japan with them?
Those guys are hilarious.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask you, I'm here with Kyle O'Reilly and WWE version of Talking Shop. Well, tell me what the Japanese version of it was for you.
More or less kind of the same thing. You know, some good brothers in a hotel room late after a wrestling show, feeling good, talking shop, but maybe a couple extra cold ones and maybe the WWE version.
Wasn't Gallows a little bit crazier?
Oh, yeah.
Gallows wasn't it like Sex Ferguson?
Sex Ferguson. He had like a game show. It was How Long You Can Jack It. Like, it was pretty good.
You know, those two guys, man, when they first came, were like, I didn't really know them. I knew Gallows when he was first in WWE as like before he was Gallows, it was like the Festus thing and all that stuff. Yeah. And then even he was Gallows with Punk. And I never really knew him. And I never met Carl, but those two guys are so ridiculous. Hilarious. So funny, yeah.
And their character is on the South Side.
Southpaw wrestling.
Yeah. Is spot on. It's just the exact characters that they...
Wearing the Ribera jackets and stuff. But we're here in Orlando. I appreciate it. We were supposed to get together before this signing I had and the traffic was bad because Orlando is nothing but traffic. And rain and old people and tourists.
Yep.
That's what I've noticed. Nothing against the fine people of Orlando, but you just moved here.
I did. I moved here from St. Louis and, you know, I'm loving it so far. It's humid, but like you said, the traffic gets you a little bit. I've never lived in a city that had so much traffic before. You know, I spent a little time in LA and you just want to rip your hair out. I could never live there in that kind of traffic. But I was like, oh, is Orlando going to be that bad? It's not that bad.
Well, you know, when you get to, here's the thing. Going out to the airport, that road, it's like a one lane highway getting out to the airport. That gets pretty packed. Are you married with a girl?
Yeah. Okay. Me and my wife, we moved to Oviedo, so a bit north of the city. Nice little suburban area. So
yeah, when I was here, it was all just tourists, old people, and strippers. Just tons of strip clubs around.
Nice.
You know, yeah, well, yeah.
And
I lost a lot of money.
Lots of wrestlers now with the PC being here.
So this is an interesting story because you kind of were rumored to be coming for, I don't know, 6 months or so.
Sure.
And then just kind of went into limbo until just recently when you finally appeared in NXT.
Right.
Was it kind of like just waiting or what happened?
You know, I don't know if I'll ever know the truth of the matter of what actually went down, but I had originally talked to the powers that be about coming in right at the start of January. So I was talking in December. I had just won the Ring of Honor World Championship and this offer comes and I'm like, if I don't jump on this, you know, I could never live with myself. I have to take this. It's a gamble, but I don't know if this opportunity is ever going to come this way again.
Because your contract was about up for Ring of Honor?
Contract was about up. The timing was great, but I'm thinking because I was talking while under contract, that might have bit me in the ass a little bit. So I dropped the title at the Tokyo Dome January 4th. I give New Japan my notice. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to start on NXT in the weekend of the Royal Rumble. And I got a call like a couple days out from that saying, listen, we can't talk for a couple months, like complete radio silence. And I'm like, oh no, what has happened?
Like something you could have told me yesterday.
So bad. But you know what? I remained optimistic. I knew that if I just kept doing my thing, the deal would still be there on the table if and when the timing worked out. So I just, you know, decided to kind of go back to the indies and work for a couple groups that I hadn't worked for in a while and take some more matches overseas in England and whatnot, and I had a ton of fun, and you know, just kind of, it'd been so long since I'd really been an indie guy because I'd been doing Ring of Honor and New Japan for a few years, so I was kind of locked up. I didn't really have a chance to make my own schedule again, so kind of jumped on that opportunity and also took a little bit of time off, give my body a bit of a break and kind of recharge the batteries. Because, you know, if this WWE thing is going to happen, I want to be ready to go 100% and prepare myself mentally and physically for it.
Is it, you had one of those kind of, this is one thing I love about the indies now, or just not just even the indies, not being in WWE, is there's a lot of guys who have this Ring of Honor, New Japan, kind of, it's a pretty good deal.
Sure.
You know, it's almost like there's guys like Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks that don't even really want to come to WWE just yet.
It's crazy. It seems like now is almost the best time there's ever been to just be a strictly independent wrestler. Guys are making great livings outside of WWE, and you know, I'm not sure if there was really ever a time where it was that good for the boys, where it comes to their own merchandise and things like that. Guys are doing really well for themselves, so it's nice to have that option.
So when you got the had you put any feelers out to WWE, or they just kind of called you? Were they paying attention about your contract, or did
I assume they must have known, because they kind of cold called me like that weekend, and I was like, listen, you know, I'm Ring of Honor champion. And he's like, well, yeah, I know, but is there something you can do about that? I was like, oh, well,
I guess. Yeah.
It's just not in Canada.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because you're Canadian.
Right.
Right. And you're from?
Vancouver, British Columbia.
Actually, Vancouver proper?
Suburb of Vancouver, but North Delta, BC.
Okay. I used to live in Vancouver, right downtown, Denman and Davie.
Nice.
Which is a lot of home of like a lot of guys that don't like girls, shall we say.
I worked on Davie at the Fitness World, so I know all too well.
There's like a lot of gay guys.
Yeah. I didn't know at the time, so I get hired to work in this gym, and I'm like, this clientele is really into me.
These guys are really friendly. I didn't know either, and I live right in an apartment down there with Dr. Luther. We live down there, and I remember we were going grocery shopping one night. It was really late. You know, typical bachelors just go grocery shopping at midnight or something, and we're walking down Denman or Davie, whichever the longer street was, and the payphone rings. Remember those kids, payphones? And I was like, you know, I'm going to be a smartass and answer the phone. Like, hey, what's up? And the guy's like, hey, what are you doing? I go, nothing. He goes, I like that red shirt you're wearing. I'm like, look down, I'm wearing a red shirt. I'm like, he goes, look up. And I look up, and there's a guy in the window. And he goes, I'll pay you $100 to come up and box with me. And I was like, and I was like, no. So I guess that was the pickup phone. If you pick up this phone, you're ready for business. And that's
did you kick his ass then, or
I made the $100. Yeah. We felt each other for a while. No, but it's just like that just was the area. So when you grew up in Vancouver, did you grow up as a wrestling fan?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I don't think you can pursue a job in this business to this degree unless you are just in love with the business and just a fan and you know, so thirsty for it. I don't think you can pick up and move your entire life on a whim with, you know.
Sure. But Vancouver's never been a big WWE town, at least for my generation. Maybe it was like in the 90s, but never since I came to the WWE.
The first show I went to was WWF Rock Bottom In Your House, 1998.
Wow.
And I just remember everything about it. Just walking in the arena with my dad and the smell of it and getting a DX t-shirt and like putting it on. I can remember the feeling of it and walking up the stairs and looking at the ring and it just creates an emotional response for me just even remembering it. And I knew then, like, you know, as you did, I'm sure there was a moment where you knew this is what you were going to do and this is what you're going to pursue. You know, I think we all have that moment.
The difference for me was coming in the being like maybe 10 years younger, or you're 10 years younger than me, maybe more. When I wanted to get in, there was no real way to know how.
Right.
Like, there was no internet. I remember I watched Stampede Wrestling, and they flashed an ad on the screen, which I had to write down. So when you want to get started, where did you go?
There is a local wrestling promotion called ECCW in they were based in Surrey, and they ran the Greater Vancouver area.
Is that Michelle Starr?
Michelle Starr's promotion. He's the guy who broke me in. So,
wow, really?
Yeah, I started going to shows maybe in the 2000s, early 2000s, and was just a loyal indie fan for them. You know, that was kind of the only independent group I really knew about or definitely cared about. And then once I graduated from high school in 2005, I was like, sign me up. And, you know, instead of pursuing a real education, I, you know, convinced my mom that this was the best option for me. And of course she had her and my friend and his mom had to meet with Michelle Starr in the subway down at Bridgeview Hall and ask all these questions about, well, do you have a paramedic at every show? He's like, well, no. Well, maybe you should. Thank you. I was so embarrassed.
Mom,
I was like, oh God, so bad. But,
by the way, I just have to interject. I was like, 10 years younger, maybe 17 years younger.
Yeah.
Sometimes I forget how old I am. But Michelle Starr, I worked a few times out there in my earlier days, and he had the old, it was kind of like an Adrian Adonis
Gorgeous George.
Gorgeous
type.
George. Yeah, Adrian Street, like kind of the, you know, big painted star and the super
feather boa, the bleached blonde.
Like destroyed straw hair.
Yeah.
Does he still have that?
I think he just promotes now. He doesn't really do it anymore. So I don't know if his hair is quite the same. But
Who else was out there, like kind of the local guys?
One of the first shows I went to, Brett Como was working.
Como!
Yeah. So Black Dragon versus Christopher Daniels was the main event.
No kidding.
And I was like, wow, this is nuts. Like, I'd never seen...
So is Como, does he have like a little bit of a name there? Like, so that's Como.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He's a bit of like, you know, a local legend.
Local legend, yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And he still takes shots, I'm pretty sure. He's working, like, I think in the Okanagan, there's some groups that he works for now and again. And Como, got to work
Como's
a
guy
times.
That we trained with, just for people that don't know, in Calgary. He had been working for a few years. And I remember I was super upset when my very first match, the promoter wanted me to be Cowboy Chris Jericho. And I was so, like, I hate cowboys. I hate country music. So I called Como, like, this is what they want me to do. They want me to be Cowboy Chris Jericho. He goes, just don't do it. And I was like, really? I have a choice? Yeah, I don't have a choice. Just don't do it. And that's Como kind of taught me those type of parts of the business. I had to be the rebel, you know what I mean? So he was still up there as the Black Dragon.
The Black Dragon, man. Shooting Star Press. He's still nailing it. So, there's a good group of guys, and there's tons of talent and a lot of hardworking people and a lot of loyal fans. But for me, in order to really make a dent in this thing, I had to go where the opportunities were. There was just, you know, I was wrestling maybe 2 to 3 times a month up there, and I'm making odd trips over to Alberta or Washington and Oregon here and there. But really, like, if I just wrestled there, nobody's really watching any, sending in for any ECCW tapes. No one's going to notice me.
That's true.
I really kind of just had to take the plunge and go where there's going to be an opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of what I had to do.
Weren't the Singh brothers there at the same time?
Yeah, I broke in with Gerv and Harv as well. Yeah.
Those guys were everywhere. I'd be in Toronto. They'd show up for a tryout. Or I'd see them in, like, you know, in Winnipeg. Like, they were always hustling.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny, too, because you see them and they were like, yeah, they're smaller guys. And I always thought, you know, like, they never give up. Like, you know, sooner or later. And then here they are now in
absolutely
the main event program.
Just
never know, right?
I know.
So where did you go from Vancouver then to get the opportunities?
For me, I really wanted to follow this path of, you know, being a big star in the indies and going to Japan. Like, that's kind of the path I wanted to go. Like, a lot of guys who were doing that path were starting to pop up in WWE. So I was like, they're not going to pick me just for my size or for my look or anything like that. Like, if I really grind to put my nose down and work hard at this, maybe I'll get picked up eventually. So I had two friends living in St. Louis, Davey Richards and Tony Kazina, and they gave me the option, you know, we got a coach. You can come out here and try and get your foot in the door with Ring of Honor. So I loaded up my car and drove, you know, the 30 hours to St. Louis. And
so how did you get over the border?
I said I was just going to do some MMA training at Matt Hughes' school in St. Louis. And so, and I went for the, because you can only go for 3 months, then you had to go back to Canada for 3 months. So after the 3 months was up, I was like, all right, well, Vancouver Olympics are on. I'll go home for the Olympics, and then I'll come right back. And so I did that back and forth thing for a little while, and it just got so shady, man. If I just got the wrong guard, having the wrong day, would Google my, like, I was a nobody at the time, so I was felt pretty safe. But
is your real name Kyle O'Reilly?
No, it's Kyle Greenwood. And so I was kind of lucky in that regard, but all it takes is just, you know, to look into me a little further, and then there's my career down the toilet.
Canada border is hard.
It's tough.
It's,
man,
harder to get across the Canadian border than it is to go to Europe.
Sure.
Even to this day
it is,
you know, especially with the guys where they want to check your car. Or I remember one time when I was moving down in 96 from Calgary to WCW when I started down here to Orlando, they wouldn't let me take my car across the border because it didn't have the proper papers from General Motors or some stupid thing like that.
Yeah,
you know, the guy just, I don't think he really knew what to do, so I had to stay there for like an extra 2 days.
Right.
You know, so when you finally started going back and forth, how did you end up staying for good?
I had to go back and forth because I would run out of money in the States. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't really work. I wasn't making enough wrestling. Eventually I'd get hired by like my landlord just doing some maintenance and stuff. He cost me some cash under the table, which is super cool of them. But eventually it was just not worth the risk anymore to keep doing the border. So I just, you know, I'm just going to stay in St. Louis. And I did like the illegal alien thing for a good 2.5 years and just hit under the radar, man.
But isn't that terrifying? Like, if you get pulled over for like a parking ticket.
Oh, yeah. I had illegal BC plates for years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously not an American driver's license.
Correct. Yeah.
So was there ever any close calls or anything like that?
To be honest, not really. I really was lucky. Like, I sometimes feel like the universe is really looking out for me and really kind of wants me to make this wrestling thing happen, because I've had a lot of luck
to come this far for sure. But I'd also met my wife at that time, who was my girlfriend at the time. So that was also a reason to kind of stay there and didn't want to risk, you know, going back and being banned for 5 years.
Did she ever say, like, are you really into me, or are you just trying to use me to get that green card, right?
Well, she was sweet enough to go to the courthouse and get married so I could get the green card a little sooner than later. So
that is pretty crazy when you think about it, man. Plus, it's a good way to not have to drive on any road trips. Like, dudes, I can't drive. I don't have a license.
And the first booking I got in the UK, I was flying back into the States, and I was like, oh, my God, because I hadn't left in a while. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get booked in the UK. I have to take this. Like, how can I not take it?
Sure.
And then I was coming back, and I haven't got my flight back to Vancouver yet. I'm just staying in Atlanta for a couple of days, you know, while I buy my flight. And, like, somehow it just worked, and they just let me cross. But, oh, man.
Like, that, how nerve-wracking is that?
So nerve-wracking. I used to just sweat for days. If I'd go home to, like, you know, work for a couple of shifts at the old restaurant or whatever, see my parents, and then, like, I know I was leaving on Monday, and it was the Thursday, I would, like, the jitters would start then. Like, I was like, oh, I got to hit the border in a couple of days. All right.
Yeah. I remember even going to Mexico without a visa when I first started going. And Mexico has a stoplight when you come in. You have to press red, or you press it. And if it's green, you go through. I'm sure you've been there. It's red, you stop. And it's 1 out of 40 is the red. And I was always ready, like, what's all this wrestling gear? And they always said, just say you're going for an exhibition.
Yeah.
You're just going for an exhibition. Or to train, yeah. Right? But just, it's so stressful, man.
Sure.
You know, even when you have papers,
yeah,
it's stressful.
It really is.
You know? So St. Louis was your base, and then finally you...
Yeah, a year after kind of showing up at all their ROH shows and helping out and working the odd dark match, they, you know, offered me a deal. And I was like, whoa, this is a wrestling contract? I'm going to sign a piece of paper to wrestle? This is sweet. And so I was like a loyal to ROH guy and working independence, of course. It wasn't an exclusive thing at that time yet. And I just worked ROH for a few years and busted my ass and tried to be the best pro wrestler I could possibly be.
But when you went to ROH, did they help you get, like, the proper work visa? Still under the table.
And anyone from INS listening to this, let it be known that if you get a green card, everything is forgiven. All the working illegally, right. All that.
And this is Talk Is Jericho with Lyle O'Miley, by the way.
It's just so weird because it's not like I'm taking people. I was just some kid from Canada trying to chase his pro wrestling dream.
Sure.
It's just but so funny.
That's just, that's one thing that I was very lucky with is I was born in the States. But I was a dual citizen, so I could never had to worry about that.
That's right.
But there was guys all the time, you know, that would cross, or, you know, you'd go to Japan and you'd see the people waiting in the room. That meant they'd have to go back right away. But when you first start out, like the first time I went to Japan, I didn't have a work visa.
Wow.
You know, nothing.
That's hard. Like,
that's
big. They play
time.
By the rules.
Big time. Rules are rules in Japan. You know, what'd you think when you first started going to Japan?
I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wrestling in Japan was always, I think, my biggest goal. And for so long, like when I'd first left BC, I was like, I'm ready for Japan. I was nowhere near ready for Japan. It would be a long time before I was close to that level. But in 2013, me and Bobby Fish finally got the call from New Japan to go over there and start tagging, and it was unlike any other experience. Just, there's nothing like being in a Japanese ring, and just it just feels so different than anywhere else in the world to wrestle. And it's the fan
way,
just, it just feels like legitimate. It just feels like, you know, they treat it like it's a real sport, but it also feels like a real sport when you're out there. And the fans, they're just treat you with such high regard, and they take care of you, and there's people waiting at the hotel after when you're getting off the bus and everything. And it's just, and the food and the culture, and everyone's so friendly and accommodating, and it's just so clean. And I absolutely love that country.
See, I'm the same way, and that's where you can tell that you really respect, like, the whole scene of Japan, and like you said, wrestling almost being a legit sport there, to where, you know, people are quiet because they're watching.
Right.
They're watching what you're doing when you're in the ring. You know, there's no beach ball mania or, you know, stupid chants. It's just the respect of, like, watching the holds, and if you do a nip up, they'll clap,
sure,
that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, a clean break is like a huge pop. Like,
not a clean break is boo.
Yeah, bad heat.
Yeah, it's so funny. I also just love the name Bobby Fish.
Sure.
Like, what a great name. Right?
That's his legit name, too.
Fish.
Yeah.
The last name is Fish, Bobby Fish.
His father is named Richard Fish, Dick Fish. True story.
How did you get hooked up with him?
We worked each other. First time I met him was at Harley Race's camp in 2007. And he kicked the shit out of me in front of, like, all the scouts from everywhere. So that was a good learning experience.
Thanks,
but we would meet him. We would meet again in Ring of Honor, and I think in 2012. And they just, you know, stuck us as a tag team. We instantly clicked. And
you know, I was starting to get a lot more comfortable with interviews and promos, because we'd kind of, you know, just try and start out, make each other laugh, and it worked for us. It kind of helped me get out of my shell, and we clicked as a tag team, and really hit it off as friends too, and then started going to Japan and traveling together a lot more. And so, you know, Red Dragon was born, and it was awesome.
That's
good,
right, that's the name of your team, is Red,
yeah,
Dragon.
Yeah, Red Dragon.
All one word.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, like the Hannibal Lecter novel, Red,
yeah,
Dragon.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
Did you, when you went to Japan, were you working with any of the Japanese guys or other gaijin? Or?
Yeah, our debut was like the finals of the G1 in I think 2013 against Kushida and Alex Shelley. So a foreigner and a and a Japanese guy. But yeah, we worked with tons. Got to work like countless tours with like a couple of the young boys, Komatsu and Tanaka, like with, you know, the young boy system. I'm not sure if you've explained it on the show, but it's like, it's so the young boy system, it starts with you begin in the dojo and you can't leave the dojo for a year until they say, you know, you're allowed to leave the dojo, and you're cooking and you're cleaning every day and you have your senpais, you're carrying the bags for them and everything. And when you finally are allowed to work shows, you nothing but black trunks and black boots and very basic moveset, hip toss and dropkick and fire. And that's the key, because they work so hard on their selling and their emotion and their fire. By the time they're allowed to create their own moveset and create their own identities, they're already so freaking good. And just getting to work with these guys night in, night out, and just basic, easy matches, but just with them selling and showing fire, we're creating magic with these guys. And like, oh man, when they get back from their excursion in the States and Mexico, like, they're going to be mad stars.
Because that's how they do it. The company will send them to Ring of Honor or CMLL in Mexico, yeah, for 6 months, a year. And when they come back, they've graduated to the next,
for sure,
level, to big boy level, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting to hear you say that, because, you know, it always makes me laugh when you hear, and I'm probably don't really know wrestling if you say this, but, oh, Japan is all high spots and there's no real selling and there's no real psychology, which is absolute bullshit.
Right.
You know, because like you said, it's all about the fire and the selling there.
Yeah.
The greats of all time.
Sure.
From Tenryu to Choshu to Chono to Muda, they're all great sellers.
Amazing sellers.
You know, and then all the workouts they have to do in the ring before.
Yeah.
They still do the tire exercise.
Yeah, the bridging over the tire. Dude, Liger still does like 500 squats before the show every show.
Wow.
Benching, just, he works, Yuji Nagata and Liger work out harder than anyone on that roster.
And they're like 50.
Yeah.
More,
it's so motivating and so inspiring. Just being on the ring apron for those multi-man tags and the little farm towns of those guys, it's like, you just pick up so much and learn so much just watching them.
Did you work ever the Super Junior tournament?
Yeah, I did. Okay. The Best of the Super Juniors. I wrestled Kushida in the finals of the Super Juniors in 2015.
Oh, nice.
That's probably, you know, probably the match that I'm most known for, I think, at this point. It was a pretty
breakthrough match.
Definitely a huge breakthrough match, and just a moment for me just to be a part of such a prestigious tournament, you know, and like,
right,
think of the guys that have competed in that tournament over the years. It's
me.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's exactly. So
and of course you won.
I did the JOB.
What? But the Best of Super Junior tournament is a 3-week tour, and they usually bring in, I'd say, maybe it's 16 or maybe it's 12, whatever, the best junior guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the tournaments over there are fairly grueling, because it's pretty much, are they doing 6 matches a week, 5 matches a week every
Something
night?
Something like that.
And it's very rare to get a day off. And when you're in the Best of Super Junior, it's like being in the G1, you're expected to have, you know, a good to great match every night, no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
100%. And the nights that you don't have a singles match, you have a tag match, and you still have to work hard.
Mm-hmm. You still have to go. Mm-hmm. Who was doing really good over there when you were there?
As far as juniors go,
either juniors,
man, just that the whole roster there is just unbelievable. The Super Junior tournament, I did. You know, Bobby was in it. Kushida, Ricochet. You know, Tiger Mask, Liger, they're still in it, doing it after,
right,
X amount of years of being in the business. It's just a who's who of some of the best junior heavyweights in the world. And then, you know, the heavyweight scene there is just top notch as well. And, you know, just being in that locker room, man, it feels very prestigious, and it's certainly honorable.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And like I said, it's a lot of depth there at this point.
Yeah.
And same thing like in England as well, in the UK.
Oh, unreal.
What was your thoughts about going over there?
I love going there. Like, the whole scene is just on fire right now. There's a lot of great companies and a lot of hardworking guys, and the fans are showing up in droves and they're buying merch. It's like,
the indie scene in the UK seems to be hotter than the United States indie scene right now, mm-hmm, by far.
Yeah, oh yeah,
and
for sure.
Like, as far as quality goes, there's no comparison. Like, there's just so many great guys. There's a huge tournament this weekend that they do every year, the Battle of Los Angeles, out in for PWG. Yeah, and you know, I think like half the freaking, there's tons of English guys out for that, and New Zealand guys, and just it's awesome to see guys. You know, it used to be the U.S. and Canadian guys were the ones who'd go overseas and get booked and everything, but now it's kind of switching, and now a lot of those guys are coming over to the U.S. for indie shows. So it's cool to see that change.
Let's talk about some of the culture shocks. What were some of the things you noticed in Japan that just kind of blew your mind as far as the culture, food or situations or TV shows? Or
there's this one guy every morning at breakfast at the Dome Hotel. He'll be there, and he has his like camera, you know, like old school camera with the flash and whatever. And then he'll take his, and he's got the gnarliest fingernails, like black, gross fingernails. And he takes your picture, and then he gives it to you, and then you sign it and give it back to him. I don't know if he's going to sell it somewhere or whatever. So he's there all the time without fail. And then one of the sponsors takes us to Ribera one night. We're having our Ribera steak, whatever. And who's behind the counter? Lo and behold, fingernails. So I guess that's the secret to the good seasoning of the Yokozuna steak at Ribera.
I like how his name is Fingernails. Is that something other words the mask, is it?
The mask guy was there too.
Okay, because there's a guy that works. Yeah. So Ribera's the famous steakhouse in Japan. Everybody knows about it. And when you go there, one of the cooks wears an actual lucha mask.
I think he's like the son of the original owner.
Maybe the guy who runs the place is the son of the owner.
Oh, maybe that's.
And I don't know what the guy with the lucha mask is. I just want to punch him. It just bugs me that he has the lucha mask when he's cooking the steak. So Fingernails is back there too.
Fingernails is back there.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't even bother giving you Ribera jackets anymore.
I was lucky enough to get one.
Is it a real one, or is it one that has the gym from Minnesota on the back?
It was the gym from Minnesota, and some of the letters seem to be peeling off, but I'm gonna take it, and that's my Ribera jacket. I'm proud of it.
You mentioned Tex Ferguson earlier with Gallows wearing the Ribera jacket, because it's like this kind of rayon satin jacket, and you would never wear it under any of it's like a disco jacket from the 70s.
Sure.
But because it's Ribera, every wrestler wants one.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
And they used to just give you like official Ribera jackets that were like, you know, whatever. But now they must have bought like, you know, 7,000 of these old ones from says the gym from like, you know, Eastern Park, Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. Yeah. And then they just stuck the Ribera logo on the front of it.
Did you ever get the Zubaz?
I never got a Zubaz. I was never that good. And the one that Eddie Guerrero had that pissed me off that I never got was they had written his name on the back of it in katakana characters.
Oh, damn.
And I was like, man, how high up the food chain do I have to go to get my damn, you know, I don't want the gym on the back. I want it to say, you know, Jericho on the back.
It's cool going there and just looking at the walls and seeing like just a who's who of names in the business who've been there and got their picture taken. It's pretty cool.
I think that if they know you're in town and they hear that you're coming, they'll put your picture up.
Oh, really?
And they'll take it down when you leave.
You know, just ego.
But there are some classic ones. So there's a great one. I'm sure you've seen it with Eddie and Chris, and Benoit has Eddie in a headlock or something along those lines, you know. How about England? Some weird stuff over there.
England, I got to spend a lot of time growing up there, actually. My mom's Scottish, so, you know, we have a lot of family over there, so going and visiting cousins. So it wasn't too far from, like, the culture wasn't much of a shock for me going over there, but.
Didn't have any black pudding?
Oh, I can't stand the black pudding. I love an English fry up. Like, the breakfast is to die for. I'll eat that all day, but.
The eggs.
The eggs, yeah. The eggs
sausages
are fine.
Sausages are great.
Sure. Even the fried tomatoes, I'll eat. Get those nasty mushrooms away, though, and the black pudding, I'm not going to touch.
So, black pudding is basically cooked, dried blood.
Right.
I mean, that's just, like, so gross.
So gross.
Like, can I have some dried blood? Yeah. Like, are you kidding me?
Or the fried toast? Like, why do you have to deep fry the toast? Toaster works great.
So when did you finally start to make the jump from junior heavyweight, like you mentioned, becoming the Ring of Honor champion? Because that's a big deal, man. Like, Ring of Honor, in a lot of ways, is the second biggest company in the States and third in the world behind New Japan, I'd say, at this
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a huge honor, pun intended. the champion at the time was Adam Cole, who's been a longtime professional rival of mine and, you know, longtime personal friend as well. We've had a lot of matches together as a team and as sworn enemies of the blood for many years, and we, you know, a feud
had been brewing between us for, you know, a number of months, and it finally came to this big match at the Hammerstein final battle last year. And you know, for them, for the office to have that much faith in me to be their champion, and for the fans to accept it as well, and for the boys to accept it, like, it was, you know, it was a huge moment in my career, man. Like, that was a, I think about getting in my car and driving out those 30 hours and making all those road trips and sleeping in my car, and it was like, you know, I was doing that, like, you know, I don't want to sound like, oh, you know, for the belt and stuff like that, but like, that is a, it's a big moment.
Absolutely, man. Anybody who says that winning a title is like, oh, it's for marks,
yeah,
you're stupid.
Yeah, right. Because, you know, it doesn't mean everything, but it's nice to know that the company has that much stock in you and faith in you. So
I always equate it as, it's like winning an Oscar.
Sure.
You know, it's like somebody is deciding to give it to you. Maybe there's a little bit more of a voting process, but there's a voting process to make you the champion too. It's like the whoever is working in the booking, and then there's also the guys who's running the promotion, the money man, all these other guys. If someone has a problem with Kyle O'Reilly being the champion, mm-hmm. you're not going to get it. So it is a real honor to
it's
get
a really
it.
Good way to put it, actually. Yeah.
You know, yeah, I've always thought that it's like a pat on the back for doing a good job.
Yeah.
But once you get it, now you have to, you know, live up to your end of the bargain.
Sure, which didn't last long. I think I'm the shortest reigning ROH champion of all time, but that's okay.
Who did you lost at the Tokyo Dome to? Who?
Adam Cole again.
Oh, yeah. Okay, drop it back. Yeah. But did you win it knowing that you were already talking with WWE?
No, I talked with WWE like that weekend right after. So it was like, okay.
Right.
So, you know, I got to do what's best for business here and what's best for my career. And
mm-hmm. I remember when I was in WCW, I didn't sign a contract for 17 months. I don't know why they didn't come after me, but it was so disorganized. I just wanted to see if I could do it. And I remember somehow it came up with Terry Taylor where they're going to put the, I think it was the Cruiserweight title, maybe TV on. And I was like, you know, I don't even have a contract. He said, don't say a word about that to anybody. He said, get the title first. And then once you get the strap, once you get the Strizap,
yeah.
then you worry about your contract issues. And it's like, you know, that's the way to do it. Get that title
yeah.
no matter what the future is holding for you.
Well, then, you know, yeah, the ball's in your court then, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So what was it like working in the Tokyo Dome?
Oh, unreal. Like, just the whole production of it and just the size of it. It's unlike anything mm-hmm. I've ever experienced. Lucky enough for me, it was actually my third time working the Dome.
Really?
First singles match. But just a huge facility. Like, the locker room is back behind home plate area, I guess, where the team play or team gets dressed, and then your match is coming up. All right, so you get in a little van and they take you outside and you go through the airlocks that keep the dome inflated, and you drive around the block and then they load you in the back and you walk up and they put you in, like, they live and die by kayfabe there. Like, they put you in like a special locker room because there's security there. You're not allowed to see or talk to your opponent again until you see them in the ring. Like like, it's pretty, it's cool, man.
It's intense.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. Hey, how was the reception for a Ring of Honor title in a New Japan Tokyo Dome show with two foreign guys? Were the people into it, or were they kind of just watching, or how was it for you guys?
I'm sure the lineup for the bathroom might have been picking up then, but
you know, this is called popcorn match.
Right, it's hard.
Popcorn match. You want a souvenir? Let's go.
Yeah, you know, like, it's hard for them to really get into a feud that's been built in the U.S. that doesn't really have any merit.
Right, right, right.
In New Japan, but they under, you know, it's still, it's a dome show. It's Wrestle Kingdom. It's a title match. So I'm just, you know, the hardcores are still into it. And I thought we had a good match. So you know,
it's a big deal to be on that show under those circumstances. That just shows how good of a relationship Ring of Honor
absolutely.
Has with New Japan to do that.
Yeah.
When you do that, I mean, obviously the match is probably booked by Ring of Honor. It's not New Japan guys deciding
right.
what's going on.
Right.
But what about if you work like Ring of Honor versus, like you mentioned, if you go over there and work with, if it's you and Bobby Fish versus Shelley and Kushida?
I think that's all New Japan.
New Japan guys. Yeah.
But I think I think it doesn't really go two ways. Like, if say Okada or Tanahashi come over, I think that, like, for them to do
right.
certain work creates like a lot of headache. Like, I think even TV Asahi has to sign off on stuff, and like
yeah,
even
yeah.
goes above the booking realm to a degree. So it's a bit different.
Let's talk. I want to talk about your NXT debut and all that stuff, but I want to also get into the reason how you and I connected.
Right.
Was that you are a type 1 diabetic.
Sure.
And when my son was diagnosed, and now my daughter's been diagnosed as well. I don't know if I told you that.
You did.
Two,
yeah.
Right.
Sucks.
And Kevin Owens said, well, Kyle O'Reilly has it. It was real inspirational because you don't really know. Like, everyone knows what diabetes kind of is, but you don't really know what it is
mm-hmm.
until it affects you seriously.
Sure.
So I called you to kind of get some advice, and you kind of gave me some ideas and some stuff. So how old were you when you were diagnosed?
I was 18, so I was a little bit older than
Juvenile 13,
diabetes, right? That seems to be the typical age, but people are getting diagnosed later and later in life, and it seems to be a bit of an epidemic right now.
I met the drummer from Rage Against the Machine, Audioslave.
Yep.
His name is Brad Wilk, and we were hanging out in England. I just met him, and I gave him, it was my dress room for this show that we were doing. I asked him if we wanted something to drink. He had a shot of vodka, and we're hanging out. Then he pulls out the needle and shoots. He goes, "I'm not a heroin addict. It's insulin." I was You have to, anyways, he found out he had diabetes when he was 31.
Wow.
And his sister found out 6 months later, and his brother found out 3 months later.
Wow.
All in their 30s.
That's
so weird. Like you said, it's some kind of a weird epidemic at this point.
Some weird autoimmune disease that seems to be affecting a lot of people. But you know what? I was 18. I'm a grown-ass man. I'm lucky I got it at that age. You know, you think of like Ash, 13 years old. You know, kids get diagnosed at birth. Like,
right.
I shudder to think, like, you know, some of these kids, their whole childhoods are they're taking insulin and checking their blood sugar 5-6 times a day. You know, what excuse do I have to complain about that or to give up with giving diabetes when there's people all over the world who are suffering much greater consequences from it.
And
so
let's explain kind of what it is. I kind of want to give a little education
because
we both obviously know now, and the diabetes is, explain.
Well, it's a disease where your pancreas basically stops producing insulin. And so there's two types of diabetes. There's type 1 and type 2. A lot of people say, oh, you're diabetic. Did you eat too many chocolate bars? I'm like, no, it's not how it works.
They shouldn't even call it the same thing.
Oh, they really shouldn't.
Because type 2 is for, like, you know, lack of a better term, for overweight people.
Right.
A lot of cases that eat a lot of crappy food.
Right. And they take a magic pill and they're good. They can keep eating their freaking 7-Ups and Mars bars, right?
Whereas type 1, the pancreas
shuts right down.
Stops producing insulin.
Yeah, completely shuts off. And so in order, like, for your cells to get energy, you need the transport hormone, which is insulin. So, you know, anytime I eat a carbohydrate, it turns into sugar in my body. And if I don't have insulin, it just fills in my blood with sugar. And that causes all sorts of complications. Like, you know, that's where people get amputated or blind or impotency, God forbid. You know, so there's a lot of negative things that are associated with it, and in order to combat that, you have to take insulin with meals, and so that will put the energy into your cells, and you know,
you're basically counting carbs,
more or less. Yeah,
right? So every meal you got to count, okay, this is 80 carbs divided by whatever your bolus is and all the other stuff.
Sure.
You know, to decide, okay, so if it's 80 carbs divided by 16, because that's the mathematical equation, then you need 6 shots of insulin or whatever.
Look at you.
Well, like I said, we're in
diabetes,
it.
Dad.
Yeah, yeah, we're into it now, you know.
Right.
And that's, and that's basically it. So what I'm asking you, as my kids are all very, both of them are 11 and 13. So when you're 18 and it's diagnosed, how does that affect you? Because, I mean, you're a teenager. You're going out drinking. You're going out with your friends.
Absolutely.
Or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I was actually seeing a doctor to get my Washington State pro wrestling license when I found out. Because I was getting really sick. I was rapid weight loss. I was frequent urination. There was not enough water in the world to quench my thirst.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew something was up, but, you know, didn't really know what. And so I saw the doctor, and they did a couple tests. And I had to get my blood taken for the license. And he comes back. He's like, Kyle, are you diabetic? I'm like, no. He's like, oh, awkward. So that's kind of how they broke the news. And, you know, it was a come to Jesus moment, and it was a bit of a make or break situation for me. But, I look at it as a blessing in disguise, and it keeps me accountable for my health now. Like, now I have no excuse to not keep myself physically fit and to watch my diet and things like that. So it's almost a good thing for me, man. Like, it's hard living on the road and this lifestyle, certainly, but, you know, like I said, I think of people who are suffering from it, and I figure, you know, with this and this lifestyle, I can kind of try and bring some more awareness to it. Like, I think, you know, Bobby Clark, the famous NHL Hall of Famer.
One of the greatest of all time.
One of the greatest of all time, was type 1. And that was in, like, you know, the medieval times of type 1, where they had to sharpen their needle every day, and there was only
boil needles, and
there was only one type of insulin. It was just, you know, it was the Wild West of diabetes. You know, it could have been diagnosed 100 years ago. It'd be a death sentence.
Absolutely.
So he always said, I don't want to be the diabetic hockey player. I want to be looked at as a hockey player that happens to have diabetes. And I kind of want to see myself in a similar regard as a wrestler. Like, I don't want to be the diabetic wrestler, because it kind of seems like sort of like a sideshow type mentality, right? Like, they didn't hire me to try and reach that diabetic market, right? You know, oh, he's a we need a diabetic, let's hire him.
Sure.
They hired me because I'm a good, competent
athletic wrestler, and so I'm gonna treat it as such, and you know,
because that's the thing too, like, when once you find out about it, like okay, Mary Tyler Moore, diabetic, Halle Berry, diabetic, Bret Michaels, I'd heard Bret Michaels for years and have partied with Bret Michaels where he's on the bus hanging out, he has to go to his back room to check his blood and take his shot, you know, and then just comes back out and keeps on doing what he's doing, which is really crazy because he's, you know, 80s rocker, those guys were drinking and doing everything.
It went hard.
You know, which is even more of a pressure because you're always having the back of your mind have to keep that count. And there's a guy, his name is escaping, he's the quarterback for the Chicago Bears.
Jay Cutler. Yeah.
Another type 1 diabetic.
Sure. So late in life as well. I think he was in his 30s.
Who else?
He was late in life.
Late in life, exactly. And like the dude from Raging Against the Machine, Brad, he found out when he woke up one day blind.
Sure.
You know,
crazy.
So Brad is checking his blood sugar in between songs. Brett leaves the stage where they do a guitar solo to check the blood. Because like you said, it's not a matter of like, oh, poor Brett. It's like Brett's a rock star and he's going to play his show, but he still has to add this in there. So for you, and I'll explain this to people, like when your blood sugar is high, it's exercise and insulin. When it's low, that's when you need candy or juice or whatever. Yeah,
100%.
So when you are about ready to go to do a match, let's say you got a 20, 30 minute match.
Right.
Do you check your blood sugar before you go out?
Yeah, always. You want it to be high, man. And like anytime I have a match, my body kind of goes into this fight or flight mode where it's like, what is happening? Because I'm bumping. I'm creating emotion. I'm basically fighting for my life. And my body responds as such and releases glucose because it goes into survival mode. So every time a match is over, my blood sugar is usually pretty high. But I kind of tend to let it run high for matches because I'd rather be a little extra tired and a little more exhausted and it be high rather than go low during a match because that's scary, man. Because that's where, you know, over long term, high is really bad. Like that creates a lot of problems in the long term. But if it goes low, things can get bad really quickly and it can get really bad.
That's so. like Brad, you can go blind.
Sure.
Or just
you go into a diabetic coma and some people don't wake up from those.
And it's interesting because you were like Ash, when you got diagnosed, you kind of just hit the ground running and go. Ash was the same, but my daughter Sierra, she had to go to the hospital for a couple of days. Like most people find out when they go into a diabetic coma.
Sure.
You were lucky that you just kind of like, you walked out of the office, like, here's your insulin, buddy. There you go, right?
Exactly.
Do you feel your blood sugar without checking?
And if it goes low, like in the night, like I'll kind of have a dream that reminds me of it, and then I'll wake up without fail. I'll wake up in the night, oh, my blood sugar's low, and I'll go have some orange juice and go back to bed. And if it's high, I can totally tell.
How do you feel when it's high?
I just feel like I get tired easily, man. I get blown up in the mat, like, oh, my blood sugar's high right now, or if I'm working out and stuff like that, or if you know, I'm just really thirsty and having to pee a lot, like.
Because that's interesting. Because like we went to Hawaii and we went spearfishing, and so you go spearfishing, you're out in like we were 3/4 of a mile out from shore,
right?
So there's no checking your blood sugar. I had some candies like in my little bathing suit pocket, but we went in. I made sure Ash's blood sugar was high. We went in 3 hours, and it's like. Like I said, it's kind of scary. If he does something, it's a long way back.
Yeah.
But when we got back and checked him, he was low, but not dangerously low. Right. So it was nice to know that 3 hours of this intense physical activity, he still came out of it okay.
Absolutely.
So you know if you go in high and have a great match of 20, 30 minutes, you're still going to come out without crashing.
Sure. And that's the key to controlling diabetes. It's routine and it's having a good support system. It's having people around you that understand what would happen if you go low or if you're high, like how to respond. And just having a routine and a base and a good plan and good medication, you know, it's a disease that you can 100% control.
Absolutely.
Man. There's a lot of diseases where you don't get that luxury.
Yes, this is not the best of circumstances, but we've noticed it's not like a horribly terminal thing. Like we talked about this, that you don't have this, but my kids have it's called a Dexcom.
Sure.
It's like a little box they put in their arm and it tells, like, I have an app on my phone that tells what their blood sugar is at all times. And if it gets too high or low, it beeps. Hey, Ash, have some sugar. Hey, CC. So that's cool. But old school style like you.
It's just my routine.
No dice,
right? It's what I work with.
Yeah.
And, I like it that way. And I don't know if I would, having an apparatus attached all the time with wrestling and training and stuff, I might have to reapply it very often. So I have my pen needles that I use and, it's funny because I actually originally started with like straight up syringes, like heroin style, and going to Japan, all syringes are banned to cut down on illicit drug use.
Wow.
So I had to get a new prescription for like the disposable syringe pen gimmicks.
Yeah, yeah, where you unscrew the the needle. Yeah,
you couldn't bring the regular syringes over. So I was like, oh, I kind of panicked.
That's weird, huh? Never thought about that because they're super strict about that there. Wow, so that's I like the fact that like you said, this could be something that you can use to kind of help other people because now it's like, okay, Jay Cutler, Bret Michaels, Kyle O'Reilly, like, wow, really? It's pretty cool to
know. Yeah, I've had a lot of people reach out to me and be like, whoa, you're type 1 diabetic? I have too. Like, I am too. This is cool. Yeah. Like,
it's not like something you're going to focus on, but it's something that like people will know that you can still do.
Exactly.
Still be a pro wrestler, you know?
Right.
Can you still go like have some beers or some drinks after the show?
Yeah.
You could do anything, right?
You can.
Yeah. It's funny. We were going to go scuba diving and at the hotel thing, it says, do you have any of these diseases? And Ash was like, I got diabetes. And I was like, shut up, man. You don't have to tell him it's 20 minutes. You just went 3 hours out there. But he was too honest, so he wasn't allowed to go. But, you know, I think a lot of people don't know exactly what diabetes really is. Right. You know what I mean?
The word dies in it. Does that mean I'm going to die?
Yeah, exactly. So Fozzy's got a new Judas t-shirt and hoodie out, and all the proceeds, like I said, are benefiting diabetes research. Today's the last day to get it. Represent.com/Fozzy. Get an exclusive Fozzy t-shirt or hoodie and help out diabetes in the process. Let's beat this disease. We know Kyle is all about that, as am I. So,
hey, this is Chris Jericho inviting you to the first ever Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Picture this: rock and roll, wrestling, comedy, live podcasting, all on the open ocean from October 27th to the 31st, 2018, from Miami to Nassau. I'm bringing Hall of Fame wrestlers, some of the greatest rock and roll bands on the planet, and putting the first wrestling ring on a cruise ship ever. Don't be a stupid idiot. Make the list. Check us out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com.
Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk about the night of the takeover in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
When you make your big debut.
Right.
Tell me about that day and the circumstances surrounding it.
Man, it was like we didn't even know anything was really going to happen on the takeover until a couple days removed. I was out in Vancouver visiting my parents and everything, and they're like, can you be in New York this weekend? Yes, sir. And, you know, we arrived at the Barclays Center, which is a huge venue. Never really worked in a venue of that magnitude, like packed like that, right? Mm. And, you know, we get the rundown of what's going down and, you know, just the whole process of trying to find a costume. Should we do it in street clothes? Well, maybe we should do it in gear because we're planning to beat these guys up. We should probably be in gear, but street clothes look badass. Let's try street clothes. So, we wear a couple Bobby wears the jeans super tight. So we get in the ring, he's throwing a couple teep kicks and he tears a hole right in his crotch. Sorry, jeans are out.
Oh, during the rehearsal?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. He's going to kill me telling this story. So we go, let's go just half gear, half shirts or whatever, but just getting into position. Like the whole production, man, they run a tight ship there. Like, they got guys, all right, I don't know everybody's name yet. I feel awful, but all right, I'm so-and-so. I'm going to be the one leading you to the ring. This is so-and-so. They're going to be pointing you which direction. This is head of security. This guy's going to make sure no fans are in the way while you're running out. It's like,
watch this through the crowd.
We ran through the crowd. Watch this video on my phone. This is the path you're going to take. So, like, someone did the path on their phone and showed us. And, man, I don't know if I've ever been so, like, amped and just nervous before a debut, waiting behind the curtain. You hear the ding 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 with the match ending that we're supposed to run out, and it's just it was unlike any other feeling in the world, just going out and kind of in.
I'm always thinking, if it's running through the crowd, like what if somebody puts their foot out
or a cord or something. I was knees to chest the whole time, let me tell you.
What if I missed the cue? Yeah. You know what I mean? But that is one thing, I'm glad you brought that up. Like, you can work around the world, and listen, New Japan is as big as it gets and Ring of Honor is very prestigious, but WWE, that's a whole different animal, man. You ain't never seen anything like that before, you know?
Like you always say, it's the big leagues, and it really is, man.
It really is.
And that's why I had to jump on that opportunity, because you never know if that opportunity is ever going to come again.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly right. And I likened it to coming from WCW, WWE was like Wizard of Oz, where WCW was black and white, and as soon as Dorothy gets to Oz, she opens the door, and it's like color.
Yeah.
It's black and white door, and you walk outside, and it's just this giant rainbow of colors and stars and unicorns, you know what I mean, all that sort of stuff.
Everybody's so smart there, too. Everybody's got just the perfect mind for the business. They have those jobs for a reason.
Mm-hmm. What was the crowd response like when you guys came out?
It's kind of even hard to even, like, listen. It's just, you know, like that scene in Saving Private Ryan where it's just, just white noise. Just, like, kind of an autopilot.
Yeah.
My legs are burning from the lactic acid for just running out so fast. Like, unnecessarily blown up to do the easiest thing. But I think, you know, I think it was a positive response. And then at the end of the night where we jumped Drew McIntyre and Adam Cole made his big debut, that's when I could kind of soak it in because I didn't really have as much to...
So this was the second run and you did?
So we did one at the end of the tag match where we attacked... Me and Bobby attacked Sanity.
Okay.
And then at the end of the night, me and Bobby come back out after Drew wins the title. And what are these two guys doing
here? Doing here again, yeah.
And Cole comes from behind and says, oh, these assholes are all together.
That's cool.
And so that was a little easier. I could kind of take it in. It was just like, whoa, like they were pretty yeah. amped to see Adam, and
that's the cool
super
thing
over.
About NXT fans is they're very, you know, they're indie is the Ring of Honor, yeah. they're super crazy hardcore wrestling fans,
sure.
so they're gonna know who you guys are. And I find too, even if they don't know, enough people do to where it's like, oh, these guys are somebody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So so now that you come out there, is this a faction? The three of you guys?
Yeah. It's as of now, I'm not sure when this is gonna air, but we don't really have our name yet. But you know, we have our purpose, and that's to put everybody on notice and attack all the champions, and mm-hmm. No one is safe when we're around as far as we're concerned, and we're here to make an impact and prove there's a reason we are here.
And it's okay, you're Kyle O'Reilly, that's
Kyle
cool.
O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, and Adam Cole.
Nice. Yeah, that's sick. A new thing too. Before that was never a thing, right?
Yeah, I was super lucky.
Be like, you know, like Tommy Thompson, they always yeah. like to tease, right?
Yeah,
Troy Thompson and Gary Glitter or something like that, you know.
I thought it was gonna be Jason Brony, Jay Brony for short, which would have been all right.
Jason Brony is an awesome name. If anybody out there is listening, Jason Brony is ripe for the taking. Yeah. Have you worked any shows with NXT since the mm-hmm. Brooklyn?
So I did a TV shot a couple weeks before Brooklyn. I worked Aleister Black. Mm-hmm. They brought us down to do our medicals, and later that day we showed up for the taping, and they're like, all right, you got a match, you're main eventing. Like, whoa, like this is a big spot for like a first time
sure
shot. So you know, it was a great experience, man. And just like I said, it's such a tight ship. You get there, all right, here's some music choices, pick one, we go over your entrance, every little detail is covered, and you know, nothing is left
mm-hmm. nothing
by
left
chance
yeah, right.
And like just the communication with everybody, and it's just everybody's so smart. First guy I see coming backstage is Shawn Michaels, and he's just, you know, giving me his thoughts and everything. It's like this is where I need
Shawn
to be.
Works for NXT now, basically.
Oh my god,
one of the coaches, right? Uh-huh. So what was that like when you see a guy like Shawn?
Surreal.
Yeah,
you know, just a guy like Shawn who's literally probably the greatest of all time, and you come back and he's there, you know, offering his 2 cents and just to soak it in and be in that environment with these guys, you know, and Hunter. Like, they're all just, they want us to succeed. You always hear these rumors of guys, be careful when you go there, oh, you're walking on eggshells, oh, everyone's out to get you, watch your back there. I don't think it could be further from the truth. They brought us there for a reason. They want us to succeed, and you know, if we do well and we make money for them, and then in turn we make money ourselves. And so I think, you know, I think maybe people who say that are a little disgruntled, or who knows, but I've had nothing but a positive experience so far, and I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to learn. I'm happy to be in this environment.
So coming to Orlando, is that because are you spending time at the PC? Like, yep. What's a normal day for you if you're not on the road?
We just came here. We're like, basically just moved here this week, so everything's still super new. We're kind of still in the orientation process.
Was Bobby coming from St. Louis as well?
Bobby's upstate New York.
Okay, gotcha.
Adam is like central Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. so we're kind of all coming from different areas. So yeah, relocate to Orlando, you know, I'm not complaining, super nice here.
Mm-hmm.
And train at the PC. Just
so you go, what did you think of that place when you first
just
saw it?
An amazing facility. Yeah. Like, what have you been there?
Oh yeah.
Oh, what a beautiful place. Just what? A perfect, it's like, you know, like, Ivy League college, yeah. for wrestling, right?
And that's what it was modeled after.
Right.
You know, like I always say, like, if you have any abilities whatsoever and some aptitude for the business, there's no way you can't at least make it to a certain point with that behind you.
Absolutely.
You know?
And the coaching is impeccable. The training is impeccable.
Do you still have to do the training and the drills and stuff?
We're still... Right now, we are with... training with Robbie Brookside, so you know, we're starting out just like in the grunt of it. Yeah, hell yeah. And you know, I'm loving it. We did the NXT PC combine these last 2 days, which is like, you know, the bench press competition, the deadlift, the sprints, and there's some elite level athletes there that could, yeah. like that Otis dude from Heavy Machinery, he benched like 245 like 48 times or something, just obscene. I'm like, well, they didn't really bring me down here for my
it's
bench
so
press
bad
ability.
Like, if I came in now, like I'm the worst athlete. Like as far as like, you know, in wrestling, I'm
stop.
I can't do rolls, lift weights, jumping jacks, all that shit. But I can do a flip off the second rope. That's easy. But I see some of the stuff that they have the trainees do, like all those drills and stuff.
It's nuts.
Like, oh my gosh, like, I'd be done.
Sure,
I'd be done. You know,
and it just proves that, you know, we're all there for a reason. We all want to be there. It just kind of reignites your passion and your belief in what you're doing. This is what you want to do, and this is right. This is the right place to be.
Have you had a lot of interaction with Hunter?
Yeah, at the tapings, he's been nothing but cool and super into this program and angle that we're doing. And he's couldn't be cooler, man.
Yeah,
you know, he's an intimidating guy for sure. But
he's definitely learned. Well, he's intimidating anyways. But now that he's kind of Vince's, you know, right hand man.
Yeah,
he's definitely learning from Vince because
right.
Hunter's intimidating, and then there's Vince who's at a whole.
Oh, I can't imagine. I'm dreading the day where I have to meet him.
you ever had the opportunity to meet him yet?
No, not yet.
Yeah. So when Hunter brings you in here, did you know you were coming in to be with Bobby Fish?
Not really. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember when we first found out about that. Like, 'cause when this whole thing started happening back in December, January, I thought I was just coming in alone. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about anybody. And then we kind of found out that the three of us were doing an angle, and we're like, hell yeah. Like, 'cause we dabbled with it a little bit in ROH, like the three of us, and it was clicking really well. Like, we all have a good chemistry and camaraderie with each other. And, you know, we're like, we're trying to push it on our way. It's like, let's do this. Like, let's make some merch. Like, let's create something here. And they're like, oh no, like, let's not. Like, and then they had Adam turn on me like a couple weeks later, and it was just like, it would have been something really good. And
yeah,
so it's kind of cool to take something that we really wanted to happen that never was, that we didn't think was ever gonna happen, and now we get to run with it. And they're giving us a lot of creative freedom as well. Like, they're really cool. Like, they know what they want, and they certainly tell us what they want, and they give us bullet points and everything like that. But I think, you know, we're allowed to kind of go out on a whim and create what we want as well.
I love the fact that as we wind down here, that it's like NXT's become like this factory of new guys learning, but also bringing in guys with name value. And then they can like, okay, so it's Bobby Roode comes in to like replace Shinsuke. And then Drew comes in to replace Bobby Roode. Then you guys come in to give Drew somebody to work with. And it's just this constant like rotation of great performers. It really is like if you're an NXT fan, like you're going to see the best of the best before you guys even get to the main roster.
And it's the perfect place to bring us in too, to just get us used to that, the system and that ring and the style, and get the audience used to us as well. Like it's the perfect feeder system,
like you
for
said,
the
style, the WWE style, because there is a style to
absolutely.
It. And just like there's a style when you go to England, or a style when you go to Japan, and you learn a lot of like I learned how many bad habits I had
right
when I first came to WWE, and you know, you just get dropped in the fire right away. But you guys get a chance to kind of grow into it a bit,
totally.
You know, so what's your overall? Is your overall goal at some point, obviously, to make it to the
WWE roster? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like that's been the goal since day one, right? But first and foremost, I just want to be respected by my peers and by guys that paved the road in this business. And I want to be, you know, when someone comes into the locker room and sees their name on the run sheet next to mine, I want to be stoked and know that they're going to have a good, safe match. And that's first and foremost. And if I abide by those morals and that mantra, you know, the championships and the money will come, I think. So I'm just going
to
keep doing
that. Who are you looking
that.
Forward to working with on the NXT roster?
Oh, there's so many good guys. You know, Oni Lorcan, I think, would be a good one. We'd match up. Hideo Itami, I really want to wrestle. I want another crack at Aleister Black. I want everybody, man. Give them to me. Line them up. I'll knock them down.
Final two questions. What's your favorite match that you ever saw that wasn't you when you were a kid, like WWE or WWF? And what's your favorite match that you've ever had?
You're totally going to think I'm kissing your ass, because as I was thinking about this on the drive over, and WrestleMania 19, my mom drove me down from Vancouver to Seattle.
Yeah.
And you and HBK was the best live match I've ever seen.
Oh, thanks, man.
That was something magical. And just being at a WrestleMania was just a surreal
moment. Just down
moment.
The road in
man,
Seattle from Vancouver,
it was unlike anything I've ever seen. And it, Hogan and Vince was pretty good on that show too, but you guys were the work rate match.
You know what I always remember with that was when Vince gets beat up and he's all bloody and Hogan's in the ring. He comes from like the ring apron, just that demonic face coming from the apron gone up, like just some kind of weird demon coming out of the scene.
That match is so underrated, man.
It's
the
a
amount
great
of
match.
Story they crammed into that, like Piper coming back.
That's right.
So good.
Super surprised on that. I think that could be Vince's best. And Vince is, I'll tell him to his face, he's a horrible worker. He's got no coordination. Sure. He's all over the place. He'll do whatever you want. And the Shawn match that he had was great because, of course, it's Shawn. But the Hogan-Vince match, I think, was my favorite Vince match because of the story behind it.
Yeah,
you know,
so much story.
The two guys that basically created wrestling as we know it together, finally, you know.
They discovered so much story, just crammed into that. It was, it was
totally
pretty good. And he leg drops him from the ladder and through a table. The Spanish announced, guy got color. Come on. So good.
How about your match, the best match you've had?
I think we all kind of have different favorite matches for different reasons, whether it was, you know, a special opponent or with a good friend in a town that things just seemed to click that night.
Sure.
You won your first big championship, like matches of different special moments. But I think I mentioned the Kushida finals of the Super Juniors earlier. That one's probably my most famous, but I think for like the best, I guess, representation of everything that Kyle O'Reilly is about and the best viewing of, you know, what I bring to the table and my style, I guess maybe a match I had versus Katsuyori Shibata, King of Pro Wrestling at Ryogoku, maybe last October, was a pretty special one.
Is that the same Shibata with the headbutt?
Same Shibata with the headbutt.
Wow,
yeah.
That's a drag. With
it is.
Did you see that?
I wasn't there for that. I've seen him do it a couple times. I countered it in the match. I wasn't going to take that. But to be honest, he's only really done it like a couple times. Like people have this idea that he's headbutting guys like that every match. But I think he'd only done it like, you know, two or three times
right?
But yeah, that's, you know.
Did you used to do amateur wrestling?
I did.
I'm looking at your ears. You got some cauliflower.
That's more from training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. A lot of grappling on the mats and the gi and stuff like that gets that. But and a lot from pro wrestling too, like a little bit inflamed, and then you take like an elbow from a waist lock. Oh, it hurts
so bad. It
doesn't
take much, man. I got lucky. I never got those ears, but it doesn't take much to get them because a couple times I've had it where you can feel it. Like,
I know.
A couple more of those and it's going to start making me.
And
like,
the diabetes too. I don't heal as well as the average man as well, right? Like if sugar's running a bit high, you're just going to cuts and things like that. It'll take a little bit longer to heal.
Oh, wow.
So I think maybe that's why I sport those a little more. So.
Yeah, well, dude, like I said, man, you were I'd never met you before, and you were there to answer some questions in a rough time in my life. So it's great to, because I actually went to Hunter after, and I said, "What's going on with this Kyle O'Reilly guy?" He's like, "We got our eye on him." I said, "Well, get him in here, man. He just helped me out a lot." And he's like, "Yeah, we're gonna get him." So
I appreciate
it.
It's
pretty
man.
Cool to know. And I was like, "Yeah, man, bring him on in." So it's an inspiration, man. Like I said, it's a very cool thing to get here and then also be diabetic and then also to be in one of the top feuds in NXT all across the board. That's pretty impressive, man. So congratulations.
Thank you so much, Chris.
All right, man. Thanks. And now, Reflections with Raven.
I'm a big fan of MMA, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, but I like striking the most, especially if they have a good picket line.
For more Reflections with Raven, listen to The Raven Effect on the Jericho Network via the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts. Raven's bringing the laughs to the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. And remember, $150 holds your cabin at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And everything is included in the price. All food, all the activities, all the meet and greets, all the signings, the Sea of Honor tournament, the rock and roll shows, the live comedy, the live podcast. It's all inclusive. If you reserve your cabin for as low as $150, you can do that. But spend some money. Once you splurge, go on a honeymoon, take a vacation. You deserve it. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. We're setting sail October 27th, 2018. If you book your cabin by January 15th, you still got a couple months left for that. You'll get a picture of me with the list. You can put your own name on the list if you want to. And if you book one of the first 400 cabins, we're getting down to that wire. You can be part of a special Q&A with me as well. And you'll be able to come and hang on the ship with all these incredible guests. Our hosts, Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. SoCal Val is our special guest cruise director. Then there's the Hall of Famers and the legends, Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Killing the Town will be there, the Keeping It 100 crew, Conan, Disco Inferno, Shane Helms, Beyond the Darkness telling scary tales with Dave and Tim,
Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Jim Brewer doing comedy. Jim Brewer is also going to be rocking with his band, The Loud and Rowdy. Fozzy's going to be rocking. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons. King, The Dives featuring Evan Stanley. The Dave Spivak Project. Rock and Roll Darlings, Cherry Bombs. Shoot to Thrill, the world's greatest AC/DC cover band, female. Blizzard of Oz, the world's best Ozzy Osbourne cover band. Busted Open Radio will be there. And, of course, Ring of Honor is presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches will be happening in the middle of the ocean. And the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. The Young Bucks will be there. The villain, Marty Scurll, will be there. Cody, don't call him Rhodes. Brandy Rhodes will be there. And the newest announcement, the Briscoe Brothers will be there. My goodness, I don't know what I'm going to do with those guys on the boat. I don't know if it's a good idea to have them, but they will be there. And it's going to be amazing stuff. More talent announced over the next few weeks. Get your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And don't forget Alpha versus Omega, January 4th at the Tokyo Dome. Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega, double main event along with Okada and Naito. Subscribe to New Japan World to see it. And don't forget this weekend, NXT TakeOver, live on the WWE Network. And it's War Games with the Authors of Pain. And Roderick Strong versus Sanity versus the Undisputed Era, which is Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and of course Kyle O'Reilly, who was great today on Talk Is Jericho. Thanks to Kyle for being here. Thanks to all of you for listening. And coming up on Wednesday, super funny comedian Craig Gass, who does a wicked Gene Simmons impression, good enough to fool Lars Ulrich. He's the rock and roll comedian. He's hilarious. He books his comedy gigs around rock and roll shows. So he's hilarious. Like I said, he's got a lot of great stories. You hear them all on Wednesday. Get your laugh on with Craig Gass on Talk Is Jericho. Until then, have a great weekend. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. And don't forget, Friday night, November 17th, on the Travel Channel, it's The Legend Of with Chris Jericho as we search for the lost gold of Butch Cassidy. That is tonight, Friday, November 17th on the Travel Channel at 11 p.m. Eastern. Check it out and watch the adventure unfold. It is amazing.